Hi, Amanda. Hi, council member.
Hey Lori, how are you?
Good.
It was nice to see you last night. I'm sorry you had to present so late.
Yeah, it was late and I tried to make it as short as I could to,
Yes,
keep move
thank
it
you.
along. Yes.
Yes. Well, we appreciate that and we got what
Yeah.
we needed, so.
Yeah. Yeah, lots of topics last night, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, there's no end
Yeah, that's
to the
true.
topics, I think. Yeah, even when you think you know what they all are.
Yep.
So
Yep. There's more coming. Yeah.
that's right. Okay. Hello, Amanda.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, of course.
It's almost easier, to join meetings with all the Zoom, because you can just do it from the comfort of your home. You don't have to drive anywhere or anything, so it's kind of nice.
Isn't that true?
Exactly. I'm curious to see how much stays the same after COVID, now that we've realized we really can do it.
That's true.
I know. I did like the traveling for work though. It's funny because we'd go to conferences that might be out of state, and it's might be the only time I see people in my own state because we all,
Oh.
go to some other, national thing. We're like, oh, so nice to see you. Yeah, but I feel like it might be a while before people are traveling like that again.
Yeah. And I
Yeah.
do miss the ease, now everything is you have to email or set up a Teams call where before you could just, jump over to their cubicle and ask them a question. Now it's a little harder to, just check in with people real quick on things, but I guess the Teams is working out pretty good.
Yeah. And I think Teams might have been like the third platform that I've had to learn to use. And I have like this, it's maybe it's just me. I have a limit to the platforms I want to learn. So I start
Yeah.
getting really resistant.
Well, and
Yep.
every time you down every time you have a new call with a new platform, you have to like download the software, sometimes like download the update. And so like I've found myself scrambling to get on a call and it's updating the software. So that's the worst.
Oh, that's
Yeah.
not good. That's not good. Now, Amanda, are you here locally or are you in DC?
I'm in DC.
Okay. How
Oh,
was it
so
over there?
it's pretty good. It's how did you say how late is it?
No, how is it over there?
It's in general, it's good. I mean, I'm not working from the office right now, as you can see. So we haven't gone back. But I think things have calmed down a bit and feels kind of like business as usual again, which is nice.
Great. Okay, we have some people joining. I see Council Member Schilling. Hello, Brian.
And my
I'm
colleague,
here.
Alex Stone, who's in our district office, she's joined us as well.
Oh, hello, Alex.
Hi.
Nice to see you in person. It might have been like a couple years.
Yes, I know. I think it has been a couple years. I think it was right before the pandemic or a few months before that I last saw you in person. It's nice to see
Yeah, nice to see you too. Of course, that feels like 10 years ago.
you. It does.
Hey, I think we're. How are you, Brian? Oh, you're on mute.
Oh, I'm good. Thank you.
Okay. Do you know if Jeff Harbaugh is going to join us?
I just promoted him to a panelist, so
Oh, there he
yes.
is. Okay.
And then Javier reminded me he's going to be gone this meeting and I think also next meeting.
Okay.
But that's again
Remember.
if he gets appointed. Yeah.
Okay. I remember he was taking a class and couldn't join us. So, okay. Hello, Jeff. How you doing, Kevin? Council Member Schilling.
I'm good because I'm going in every day for work finally to teach. And I'm just thanking God every single second because I have somewhere to go for some amount of time. I was losing my mind.
Getting routine back is really nice.
The absence of routine, I think, is something that humans aren't good with because we lose our minds because we've never learned how to deal with anything like that before. We're always taught, have a routine, do something well, follow the instructions. Disaster.
Yeah, I don't see you doing well sitting at home by yourself.
No, I really don't.
You need that interaction.
I've been reading way too much.
Oh, that's not a bad thing. I feel like I've exercised my reading muscles a lot more during. That's one positive thing. Read a ton of books.
I agree. I'd agree with that.
Okay. Well, it's 6:02. Shall we get started? I think the mayor. Shall we wait for Mayor Mata? Or should we just get started here? We'll just do that and he can hop on board. I really try to keep the meetings to an hour because I know that people's times are really precious. So let's just move along. And Lori, do you mind bringing up the agenda, please?
Lori's waiting.
There we go. And actually, before we do that, why don't we go around and do some introductions? So I'm Sophia Aragon. I'm a Burien City Council member. 2020 was my first year, and I've just started as the new chair of this Burien Airport Committee. And so I'm really on a learning mode, and I'll probably be that way for a while. So I'm going to just name folks on my screen, and if you can introduce yourself, that would be great. So Amanda.
Hi, everybody. I think I know most people on the call, but I work in Congressman Adam Smith's Washington, D.C. office, and I handle the transportation portfolio, so I cover all things SeaTac Airport, airplane noise, noise mitigation. So if you have questions, you can reach out to Alex or I, but Alex is in our Renton office, and I work out here in Washington, D.C. Nice to meet you all.
Thanks for joining us, Amanda. And Lori?
Hi, I'm Lori Fleming. I'm the staff liaison here at Burien City Hall. So just help coordinate the meetings and make sure they're running well.
Thank you, Lori. And Brian?
Good evening. Brian Wilson, city manager, city of Burien. Pleased to be here. And just want to thank Amanda and Alex for being here tonight to our airport committee meeting. Thank you.
Thanks, Brian. Alex.
Hi, everyone. My name is Alex Stone, and I'm a staffer in Congressman Smith's district office in Renton. And like Amanda mentioned, I also work on the transportation portfolio.
Great. Thank you, Alex. Jeff.
Good evening. I'm Jeff Harbaugh. I'm a Burien resident and a committee member, and I guess I'm about to start my second two-year term on this committee. And Sophia, bad news, I've still got a steep learning curve too.
Okay, thanks for the validation. I appreciate it. Thank you. And Councilmember Schilling.
Hi all. Really quick, Lori, can we go to gallery mode for a second? Because I'm on my iPad and I can't see everyone and I want to.
Oh, here, I'll just stop.
Okay, there we go. Because I want to say, Amanda, a year ago, you, me, and Nancy Tosta were eating pizza watching the mayor of D.C. declare a emergency disaster.
That's right. I'm seeing now like the people that were the last human beings I was in the same room as before everything shut down. So it is quite a reminder.
I was your last human contact before.
In a crowded cafeteria with like hundreds of other people. Like the thought of that now is horrifying.
We're so lucky we're not dead. So I'm Kevin Schilling, Burien City Council member, excited to be on the airport committee. As I just sort of exuberantly said, I had a meeting with Amanda a year ago and we were discussing the FAA issues. And that was right before Congressman Smith sent off, or what did those meetings lead to? It led to the FAA. I can't even remember. My mind's been clogged by COVID. The big thing was restricting the FAA from, can you remind me, Amanda?
Gosh, we've done a lot with FAA, so I don't know that I could tell you specifically what that meeting was followed by. I know the quiet, I know we sent letters to FAA on behalf of a couple of different organizations and it locally. So I honestly couldn't tell you exactly what it was, but we've worked with Quiet Skies over the last year to get FAA to give us an update on all of the research that was commissioned under the FAA reauthorization bill. So it could have been around the 65 DNL metric and getting them to release the report, which they did do last spring. So it could have been that. That's something that we hear about from all of our districts. Unfortunately, that report left a lot to be desired. So it was quickly followed up by us writing them another letter from the caucus saying, do better and release a new report, which is why it's hard to keep track of all the things that we have had to ask them in the last year.
Right. That sounds right, though. Okay. Good to see you again.
All right. Well, that sounded like quite a bonding experience. Okay, so can we flip back to the agenda?
Right, I just wanted to point out, we do have two guests, Dave Kaplan from the Port of Seattle, and then one that's called Metronome, Bruce D / Seattle. So those are our two guests.
Okay.
And then I will
switch
back to the share screen here.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Dave, I'm sure you know everyone, but do you mind doing a brief introduction as well?
Oh, whoops. Okay, hold on. Promote him to a panelist here. Whoops.
Oh, hi. Dave Kaplan.
Give him a sec.
Oh, I'm not sure what I did.
Am I still here?
Yeah, I think. Yep.
Oh, okay.
There you are.
Yeah. Dave Kaplan, local government relations for the Port of Seattle.
Thank you, Dave. And Metronome Seattle, would you introduce yourself, please? You're on mute.
Oh. My name is Bruce Dennis. I'm a Burien resident, and I've been involved in Quiet Skies Coalition since Larry kicked it off. Geez, I can't even remember how far back, but it's been a while. In any event, I've worked with Larry for a while. I worked with Debbie Wagner for a while, and I'm very interested to hear what's going on.
Great. Thank you so much for joining us, Bruce.
Thank you.
Okay, great. So I hope folks have had the opportunity to look at the agenda. And so are there any requests for additional agenda items? Okay. And can I have a motion to affirm the agenda?
So moved.
Okay. Do you have a second?
Second.
Thank you. And let's see. Okay. And everyone's figured that. So also we're moving right along to the minutes, and does anyone have any questions to the minutes or a motion to approve the minutes from our last meeting?
I'll move to approve them.
Well, I don't know. I don't think we can approve because this is just a study session.
Okay.
Because we don't have a full membership yet. So we can only do like discussion. So I made a note that we'll approve those at the next meeting.
Okay. Thank you, Lori, for the reminder. Mm-hmm. All right. Okay. So our very first business agenda item is an update from Congressman Adam Smith's office to a letter from the FAA around the AirPlay's noise mitigation program for homes. And so thank you to Amanda for coming today and giving us a little bit of background to this letter.
Yeah, thanks for having me. So this letter has kind of an interesting history. Last summer, Catherine Clark's office, she represents the area around Boston, got some language into an appropriations bill, the Transportation, Housing, and Urban Development Bill, which is appropriations bills are good for one full calendar year. And they're often a place where we can call on an agency to do something that's not changing statute. So appropriations bills have specific rules around them. We can't change the statute, but we can ask for more information or reports, or there's some leeway and flexibility for members to ask for certain things in those bills. And so her office asked for language around noise mitigation that was intended for Boston. But when I read through it, I thought there was a chance that it could actually be helpful to the Port of Seattle in addressing some of the concerns around replacing noise mitigation here for our residents. So I want to be really clear from the start that we had no involvement in getting this language in the appropriations bill. We found out about it when we saw the text, and we thought, like, what other office is working on noise mitigation? So the reason I couch it with that is because there are a lot of restrictions in the language that the Clark office got, including the 1993 cutoff date, that were it our office that got the language, we would have pursued something far more comprehensive, because that obviously doesn't help everybody in the 9th district. However, we thought because that language made it through and it passed as part of the December stimulus bill, it was a good opportunity to actually get the FAA to make good on getting this replacement noise mitigation for some homeowners potentially for our district. So after December, the bill passed. The tricky thing with appropriations language, the language was included in what's called the House report that accompanies the appropriations bill. And that language is not binding. It's not statute. So technically, the agency doesn't have to do what we ask. However, most of the time, agencies try to, you know, follow through and do what Congress members include in that report language. So to try to kind of put more emphasis on it, we collaborated with the Clark office and said, we actually think this could be really helpful, but we want to get FAA to give us some confirmation of what their process is going to be for allowing airports to take advantage of this narrow exception to their rules. And so we think a letter, which we can put out publicly, will put some pressure on them to at least give us some clarity on if they're planning to implement this. And then if they are, telling the Port of Seattle how they would take advantage of that flexibility. Because the way that noise mitigation works, just in case folks on the call aren't aware, is like you have to get reimbursed after the fact. And so there needs to be a guarantee that they're going to make good on that language beforehand. Otherwise, you could end up kind of holding the bag at the end. So the goal of this letter was really to get FAA to respond to us in writing with, here's the plan, here's how we're going to implement it, here's what the ports will need to submit to us, here are the requirements that the homes will have to meet. And that way, if the Port of Seattle decides to take advantage of this, it's very clear what they would need to do and document and present to FAA in order to get reimbursement at the level that the FAA reimburses. So that was kind of the goal of writing this letter with Catherine Clark's office. And then Dave, I don't want to put you on the spot, but I'm not sure exactly where, I know the port has heard from FAA a little bit, but I don't want to speak too soon about kind of where you're at in those conversations. So if you wanted to share, you know, whatever you're comfortable sharing with us on, you know, if you've heard any follow-up since this letter was sent and kind of give us your perspective, that might be more appropriate coming from you than from me.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. I didn't plan on speaking tonight, but that's okay. Yesterday, I sent out an email on behalf of Lance Little. We received communication from, I forget if it's Chuck Garrity or Garrison, the acting airports director for this region, who indicated noise mitigation program could take into consideration homes that had been insulated prior to 1993 within the current 65 DNL footprint, and that it would be subject to the same funding source. No additional funding is provided for that, which means that it essentially competes with those projects that we are committed to following through on from the Part 150 relative to condominiums, apartments, and houses of worship, which are our current work program. I sent an email out to the Highline Forum members yesterday. Councilmember Aragon, I believe, received it. Brian received it. And trying to think, Councilmember Olguin, I think, is your alternate on that. So, anyhow, that information was sent out yesterday. We're trying to find out more ourselves in terms of what that means. We don't know how many homes that means. We don't know, within that time frame there. I think the first Part 150 at the airport goes back to 1985 or so. So you're talking about homes within a pretty, an 8-year period of time. And again, within the current 65 DNL footprint, contour. So we're not sure exactly what it means. We're trying to identify what it means, and that'll help us figure out what a program would look like to even address that, what the potential cost might be, and that kind of thing. But so it's really fresh information since we received the letter on Friday, and but it's obviously good news, and the FAA was positively responding to the communication it received, as well as obviously the substantive language in the legislation that passed last fall, which is always encouraging when the agency does what the Congress has actually laid out. So that's the extent of what I know.
Thanks, Dave. Sorry to put you on the spot, but I think it's helpful to get a sense of your work and our work and how it kind of complements each other's. But I'm happy to take questions from you all. I also can, if we have time, happy to update you on a lot of the work I've been doing over the last 6 months to try to expand on this language and see what might be possible in an FY22 appropriations bill or even an infrastructure bill. Some of that's public because we tried to get some language in the infrastructure bill last year around this issue to broaden it to apply to basically to create a repair and replace program that airports could use AIP funding for. And if that's something people are interested in, I'm happy to elaborate on that, but I certainly don't want to take up more time tonight. So. Mm-hmm.
Well, that would be wonderful. Does anyone have questions for Amanda on the letter itself? No. But I would be happy to hear an update from you, Amanda, on the work you've done to expand on this letter.
Yeah, so as offices in Congress, we have a couple of opportunities every year to try to get things passed in bills that will actually become law. One of those is the appropriations process, where there's a lot of flexibility to ask for increases in accounts. But until this year, actually, there's been a 10-year hiatus on what we used to call earmarks, what we're now calling community project funding requests, where we can actually ask for money for specific projects in our district. We were recently, as in like last week and the week before, we've been getting information. We've been told we can ask for certain community funding requests for specific projects in the district. However, it's extremely limited and it doesn't allow us to modify statute or to like go beyond what current law allows. And that has made the process of getting replacement noise mitigation extremely challenging because currently, based on statute and regulations around federal projects, the FAA is not able to create a program where they could go back and provide resources to the same project or home twice. And so even though airports have the flexibility to apply for AIP funding year after year, there's no way to go back and get funds to replace something if something goes wrong. And so this is an issue that I have been talking to the Committee on Transportation and Infrastructure about for over a year, saying like, we need to figure this out. The challenges there's lots of challenges, but I'll kind of give you the main sticking points and the concerns that the committee has brought to me as we've tried to wade through what solution might exist here. Number one being that AIP is extremely underfunded. So the number of requests from airports far exceed the dollars that are in that account. Another challenge is the way that we fund AIP. So AIP is broken into discretionary and formula grants. So airports get a certain chunk for formula, and then there's a discretionary pool. And within that discretionary pool, there's a set aside for noise and environmental projects. And so in a normal appropriations account, you could ask for funding for noise and environment. But because of the way that AIP is structured, we would have to ask for more money for AIP into the top of the account, if you picture it like a bucket. And then some of the money would filter into discretionary, and another smaller chunk would go into noise and environment. That structure makes it incredibly difficult for us to, through the appropriations process, we can't just ask for an increase in an account in the same way we can for other agencies and other accounts. So I've been kind of having a couple of different conversations with both appropriations as well as transportation and infrastructure about whether or not there's a way we can either A, change the structure of AIP so that members who have problems with noise mitigation, who want to, you know, increase funding for environmental projects, et cetera, can do that more effectively through the appropriations process, because those are high priority items, not just for our office, but also many of the other offices who are part of the Quiet Skies Caucus. And so those conversations have been challenging just because of a little bit of a lack of clarity on how you would do that in shoot, and also what the potential unintended consequences of that would be. So we're having those conversations, but aside from that, we are also doing a couple of other things. So last year through the big infrastructure package, which to my understanding, we'll see an infrastructure package this year that looks very similar to the one that the House passed last year. We asked for an amendment to be offered that would allow AIP to be used for replacement noise mitigation under certain circumstances. So we filed that amendment, and it was based largely on the state legislation that passed that Tina Orwell and Karen Kaiser carried the water on. So we had some really specific parameters. We said you had to have, you know, a state licensed building inspector look at the work that was done and kind of attest to the state of the product and make sure that, you know, those funds weren't going to go to homes that maybe had been severely neglected, and that they were going to go to homes that really had a defective product or were installed inappropriately or not with, you know, adequate ventilation and things like that. So we filed that amendment, and the committee kicked it back and said, no, we're not going to offer this amendment. They had a couple of concerns. They have a lot of concerns about, again, the cost of funding, the potential cost of funding replacements at every airport that has a noise program. And then they also had concerns around this changing dynamic of the 65 DNL. So over time, the 65 DNL has technically shrunk. Setting aside a lot of the debate, which I think is totally legitimate, around whether or not the 65 DNL is a good metric, whether or not it adequately describes noise, which I think we can, most of us agree, it does not do a great job of capturing some of the metrics that we think are attributed to annoyance. But the reality is that in the FAA's mind, the DNL has shrunk. So there are some homes that fall outside of the current 65, but when they were insulated, they were in the 65. The FAA and Transportation Infrastructure Committee staff have told us that under current law, they are not interested in entertaining a law change that would allow us to remitigate homes that no longer fall in the contour, because according to the agency, those homes no longer experience the problem of aviation noise. Now, again, I want to set aside what we think versus what they're saying. We think that most of those homes, if not all, are still falling close enough to the airport that they still experience noise. And the bigger issue is that, at least in our district, there are concerns in some homes around deteriorating products and the impact on the home itself. And so I've tried to make that case and say, like, this is really about like a damaged product and less so about, you know, making the home quiet again. So what we'll try to do is kind of find a way to thread the needle, but it's been really challenging, to where you could allow a replacement in certain cases, but without opening up AIP to basically perpetually replacing very expensive equipment in every home that's ever been mitigated before, because that's what you'd be allowing if you don't create some parameters. So that's a lot of information, and I use some really technical language, and I'm happy to take questions if that's kind of sparked your interest.
Any questions for Amanda? I'm always amazed at the technicality of these issues. And so thank you for that deep dive, but simplifying it for us at the same time. How is the AIP funded?
So it's funded every year through the appropriation cycle. However, it's some of those funds are coming from the Airport and Airways Trust Fund, which is funded by excise taxes on aviation, which are currently paused. That is another hiccup in a lot of funding woes for airport and aviation related projects. Before COVID, the Airports and Airways Trust Fund had plenty of money. When we kind of paused collecting certain excise taxes, and given the severe drop in travel, there's no longer enough revenue going into that fund to pay for the projects that are allocated. So we actually had to do a transfer of funds from Treasury to the Airports and Airways Trust Fund this past year in the COVID packages to keep it solvent. So I would say last February, we were entertaining, you know, maybe there's a way we can pull some funds from that Airport and Airways Trust Fund to fund a replacement noise mitigation solution. But given that it's now in the red, that's no longer really an option, at least at the moment, you know, certainly not forever, but for now.
Mm-hmm. And what's the process to restart those excise taxes? Is it a wait and see for COVID to resolve and things get back to normal?
That's my understanding. I'd have to look, and I'm fairly certain it would take an act of Congress, like just like it would take an act of Congress to, you know, restart some of the other things that we paused or delayed during COVID. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's just something that's up to the agency itself. So I think we would have to pass another relief package or put it in an appropriations package.
Okay, interesting. And this is more of a question for Brian. If there was funds or a program that was created for this mitigation, is that going to only be administered by the port, or does Burien have a role in creating criteria or the process in which someone can apply?
I believe this would be likely administered by the port, but with, you know, our connections to the port through START and through other means, I would anticipate input being provided as to how those particular funds are distributed.
Right. Certainly over the last 2 years, all I've ever heard about was the port being responsible for allocating and implementing those programs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're correct. The airports are the project sponsors for any noise mitigation projects if they are going to receive federal funds through AIP. So AIP is structured such that the federal government will reimburse 80% of a noise mitigation project through AIP, which is why it's so valuable to airports. However, there are examples of ports and other, you know, ports can use their own resources outside of AIP to do whatever they would like. I mean, within other statutes and, you know, obviously state and local laws. But AIP specifically governs the rules and regulations of who qualifies for noise mitigation. And the reason that it's so technical is because it's federally subsidized. So, like, the federal government is saying, like, we'll do this. If your state or your local government or your port authority wants to do beyond that, that's great. But like, we're not going to fund a project at 80% unless it meets certain criteria. So that's why that's where the 60 of DNL comes into play. That's where they do interior noise testing to make sure that the home would actually be like I think it's 5 decibels that it has to be improved by in order to qualify for AIP funding. So like those really onerous rules are for AIP funded projects. So I just want to be clear about that distinction.
Thanks, Amanda. And, you know, while this looks like, I didn't realize excise taxes were paused, which, and that, you know, a decrease in funding is usually problematic, but are there, you know, what are some other opportunities you've seen since the COVID crisis around airports and mitigation?
To be honest, not much. I think there's been funding for airports specifically, but that funding has been intended to cover the loss of revenue over the last 12 months. And so in the CARES Act, in the December stimulus bill, and in the most recent American Rescue Plan, there was funding specifically for airports. I'm not sure exactly what the parameters are on all of those, all of that funding. And I know there was different parameters in each package as to what they can spend that money on. But I don't, there was no money that was specifically set aside for mitigation. Certainly, again, there's funding for state and local governments in the American Rescue Plan. If that was, you know, and I have no clue what the parameters are in terms of noise mitigation, but there wouldn't, or if there would be restrictions barring you from using federal funds in, you know, to pay for something like this. I think it becomes an issue of prioritization, though. Obviously, during COVID, local governments are struggling to pay all kinds of bills and cover costs of all kinds of projects, and same with airports. And so I think that just really becomes a local decision around, you know, what, whether or not this is your top priority or whether or not this is something that you think you're going to have to wait until times, you know, aren't as tight as they are right now. But I just don't know exactly what those restrictions are. But if you are interested in looking at what the parameters are on some of those funding streams, I'm happy to look into that for you, because those are answers I can definitely get.
Okay, that would be great, Amanda. I would really appreciate that.
Do we have any data on the size of the problem? Do we know, at least in our part of the world, how many houses we're talking about having to fix that got fixed before? I might have seen some of that data, but I don't really recall it. I guess I'm curious, because then if you could put some sort of an average cost to it, you might begin to know how much money you're talking about.
I don't. I know that we have like a rough back of the envelope, but it also depends on whether or not you're talking about everybody who was insulated or everyone that has a problem, because there are, I think the way that the Port of Seattle's data is structured is a little bit challenging to pull. Like, they can pull like how many homes were insulated within a certain time frame, but when you get down to like how many of those homes had, especially like the bad windows, there were some windows that were installed that have those are the ones that tend to have the problem. There's still plenty of homes that have those windows that haven't had a problem. And so we'd really have to do a lot more digging. And I think the port is in the process of doing that to determine who's in and out of the 65, who has a problem, who doesn't, whose problems are, you know, fully needing a full replacement versus whose might need just something, maybe a repair. And those questions, I don't believe we can answer. And Dave, I don't know if you have anything else to add to that, but that's my understanding.
No, the challenge is trying to figure out the scope of everything based upon information that's, you know, some of it in excess of 30 years old. Just a reminder, computers were not that common back then. So you're talking about trying to find paperwork at Iron Mountain or some other place that it's stored, assuming you can find it, you know, that it was retained or not. So there's a lot of things that play into it. You know, some of the window installations, for example, they did provide ventilation, but if people didn't open the ventilation to allow for the airflow, that could cause issues related to mold or other things occurring. So at what point is it an issue of maintenance versus actually a bad install? You know, so there's a whole series of questions. Right now, we're just trying to get our arms around the scope of what would be allowed under the guidance that we provided by the FAA based on the based on what passed Congress last fall. So, and again, our priority, the commission has made it a priority to complete the mitigation work from the last Part 150 in 2014 or 2015, which includes condominiums, apartments, and houses of worship.
Okay. And being a new person, that sounds like that last statement, Dave, is that those are the types of structures that didn't benefit from that last effort. And those still need to be addressed.
Yeah, it's really been a funding challenge. I remember when they first even attempted, they had never insulated. I even believe nationally, nobody had attempted to insulate apartments, condominiums, and even mobile homes to see if they were if it was possible to do this. I remember when that was done as a test a number of years ago. Of course, the mobile homes didn't prove out. But the apartments and condominiums did. So those got added to the list in terms of what was eligible for funding. But again, it's all been driven by what's been available from the AIP program, because you could actually leverage dollars from the AIP, you know, with the 80% reimbursement on it. And that's the challenge. So, and with not that many flights going on, they're not collecting the passenger facility charges and some of the other things at the same levels they were before to replenish the funds, which is what Amanda was speaking to. And so the last briefing that was done relative to anticipated return to 2019 flight levels is like 2024, just to give you an idea.
Wow, okay.
Okay. I think you bring up a good point, though, Jeff, about getting a full picture of the anticipated cost, because only then will we really be able to break down what we can do federally expeditiously, like within current law. Because if we can do the homes within the 65 DNL, if we can get language in the appropriates bill similar to what Catherine Clark's office got for homes prior to 1993, if we can increase that to homes prior to 2001, but within the 65, that would help another significant tranche. Obviously, like, it would depend on, like, you know, the port's ability to, like, manage both the projects they have going on, as well as this new kind of tranche of homes that we're talking about, to Dave's point. But if we could do something like that, even if we remain unsuccessful, although I think we are going to continue pushing to try to get them to allow a repair and replacement program, even for homes that don't fall within 65, even if it's limited to homes with like serious damage. But if we are unsuccessful, it'll at least leave local and state government officials looking at like, here's that remaining tranche of homes and here's what it would cost to just get those homes done, as opposed to right now where it's like total black box and we just don't know how many homes we're talking about, the cost, or what's impossible at the federal level to even be able to have that conversation with stakeholders.
Amanda, if we could get from the port, and Brian, maybe this is a START committee thing, if we could find out how many houses did you install? How much did you spend in total? What years did you do them in? What's the inflation we need to put into that? Couldn't we begin to get to a number somewhere between 10 million and a billion, and maybe we could work a little harder to narrow it down a bit? At least we'd know what we were working with. You know, and having large numbers like that makes it more likely that the average we get might be.
Yeah, that is something we can bring up at START, I think, to talk about the process to be able to identify that number. And, you know, Amanda, as you talked about, you know, we're in this 65 DNL area, which has actually shrunk, you know, based on planes and things. But, you know, there's still a lot of concern about that 65 DNL number, which is a whole nother topic. But certainly, that would be helpful to understand exactly what the need is within the Burien, but not only Burien, but also other, some of our other neighboring communities as well.
Certainly. And I just want to flag, I'm happy to come back anytime if there are other topics that you want to deep dive on. I know we don't have time to go into all of it today, but I'm happy if you want to give like just an adequate heads up of what your questions or topics are, I'm happy to run them to ground or share information or come back and present to you all if that's helpful.
Great. Well, and thank you, Amanda. I have a different type of question. Again, a newbie question is there a caucus of Congress, members of Congress that focus and advocate for airport issues for communities that consistently work together, like on some other issues?
Yes, so there's the Quiet Skies Caucus, specifically targeted on plane noise and emissions issues. So caucuses in Congress are fairly informal, but what it means is that we get together, staff primarily, we ask the FAA to prepare reports for us to come and talk to us. We had the administrator come a couple of times in the last few years. And in preparation for those meetings, we can ask questions ahead of time. We can follow up and get questions answered in writing from the agency. But we also all try to kind of support each other's efforts. So even though mm-hmm. noise mitigation isn't a huge issue in every district, it is in some. And so people will co-sponsor legislation that we lead, or, you know, they'll sign on to letters that we write to the FAA sometimes if we put them out there for others to sign on to. So that's kind of the process. And so if you all would like to be included, I can, next time we have administrator meeting, I'm happy to reach out to get questions that either your constituents are asking you or that you're curious about that you think we need to ask the administrator about, because that is an opportunity mm-hmm. we get through the caucus.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And who are those key members of caucus that Representative Smith works with closely?
So the two co-chairs of the caucus last Congress, and I don't believe that's changing, are Stephen Lynch, who's Massachusetts, just outside of Boston, and Eleanor Holmes Norton, who represents the District of Columbia. So she, even there's no airports in DC proper, there's lots of helicopter noise here, and we also have three major mm-hmm. airports in the region. And so there's a lot of overflight noise. So
great. Well, thank you so much. This has been a wealth of information, and you know, thank you for, you know, answering our spontaneous questions as well as a really nice thorough briefing. Any other questions for Amanda before she goes? And I'll open it to our guests too, if that's okay, Lori. All right. Well, thank you. And Alex, is there anything you want us to know tonight?
Well, I just want to introduce myself. I'm somewhat new to this role. In the past few months I started. So I just really look forward to getting to know all of you who I don't know. And, you know, like Amanda said, please do feel free to reach out to me or to Amanda. You know, we're both really happy to continue these conversations and answer any questions and be as helpful as we can. So, you know, thank you for having us here tonight.
Well, thank you both.
Yeah, it's been great and good chance to introduce ourselves to everybody on the call, even though some familiar faces, and we're always happy to come back if that comes up or if that would be helpful.
Okay, you're welcome. And
good
of course,
thank you.
Yes, and of course you're welcome to stay, but I know that your time is precious also. You will probably get follow-up questions from us. So thanks
Perfect.
Again.
That'd be great. Okay. I'm going to head out because it is a little late my time, but it was great to be with you all.
Thanks, Amanda.
Thanks. Take care.
Okay. Next on the agenda, Lori, do you mind pulling it up? Okay. Update on the selection of airport committee members. And I'll just make a quick note of that is that the city council is reviewing quite a long list of Burien residents who want to be involved in a number of our advisory committees. And we have six openings, correct me if I'm wrong, Brian, on the airport committee and there are five applicants. So if there are other people that you think may be interested, please have them contact the city and submit an application. However, the interviews for current applicants will begin shortly. So perhaps by our next meeting, we'll have a few other people join us in this work. And so, Brian, can you talk about the START community representatives piece of this agenda item?
Sure. We will likely reopen the airport committee members, just as an FYI, given the fact that I think the process is closed currently, but we will reopen to fill that remaining spot. We are still, and as you mentioned, Councilmember Aragon, we had over 60 citizens, you know, interested in applying. So we've been somewhat challenged, and in a good way, with the amount of interest for boards and commissions within the city. We're planning. We have not opened the START positions yet, that process, but we're hopeful to do that in the next week. And that'll likely be in concert with the additional airport committee position that will be available as well. Great.
Okay. Any questions on that agenda item? Okay, so our next agenda item is an update on the START meeting on February 24th, and I'll turn it over to Brian Wilson.
Great, thank you. I did include in the packet the agenda and some information that was discussed at the last meeting, which was on February 24th. At that meeting, we talked about the new START revised. I'm sorry.
No, I think that was background noise from someone, okay, but I think they were muted. Go ahead.
We went over the new START operating procedures, which were introduced to our new facilitator that's been hired by the port and was with input from the six cities who were part of START. That was a good process, and I think our new facilitator is very experienced in doing a good job for START. I'm just going to talk about a little bit about these revised operating procedures. There's been some really key changes. One is the reporting structure with the Highland Forum, which is now formalized. And so, with the Highland Forum being a policy-making group with elected officials present, this structural change, we think, is going to be a positive effort. We talked about the SAMP, which, there were concerns that at some point that participation in START would be evidence of agency participation or feedback as part of the SAMP process. And so that's been clearly stated that it is not, which I think was a concern about prior about having people participate in START. So that was a good change. Talked about the recording of meetings and the discussion around that, which they will not be officially audio or video recorded. However, a big part of this was changing to a steering committee, which is made up of the START representatives from the cities and the port. And so there's a much better process in terms of how agenda items come on to for discussion. And also any type of communication that comes from START needs to be approved by this steering committee. That's in terms of any correspondence that comes out of the committee. So we're pretty pleased with that. At the meeting, there was also a discussion and a presentation by the FAA regarding the Neighborhood Environmental Survey. And this is a long-awaited report. This was actually done in, 2015 or 16. It's taken quite a bit of time to get this report released. And there's some metrics and analysis that was done to determine noise levels on a national basis. And so there was quite a bit of discussion by the FAA about, you know, wanting to get, you know, a good sense of what are the noise implications, you know, across the country, not just in certain high areas. So I think they threw some statistical analysis, which is, you know, certainly subject to, arguably subject to review. They landed on, I believe, a neighborhood of 20 different locations and then utilized that data with this noise annoyance survey. It is pretty specific and pretty states, you know, there are significant impacts, you know, with noise that's come from this study. I think one of the things that was interesting from the FAA's perspective is, you know, this is the first type of review of noise that the FAA has conducted since the 70s. And so, you know, it's really long overdue. It is just a snapshot of what the impacts are pertaining to noise across the country. But I think, you know, the FAA and certainly all of us have a lot of work to do going forward to address the impacts and mitigate those impacts for airport communities. And, you know, as I mentioned in our prior discussion, this 65 DNL, it isn't just the single noise, you know, of a plane, which, you know, is much different today, given the technology enhancements with aircraft. The difference between a 727 and something else, you know, one of the newer 787s per se, is pretty significant. But given the growth of all the flights, the numbers are so much more that has a big impact on noise. Moving to the Federal Policy Working Group, and I wanted to, and then also the noise group, we did facilitate that fly-in with our federal legislators, and so you know, that process did take place and was successful. One of the things on the Aviation Noise Working Group, which I think is a positive, is the port has had you know, the late night flight programs and trying to reduce the use of the third runway at night during nighttime hours between midnight and 5 a.m. And there were some pretty positive numbers showcasing the impacts that third runway is not being used near to the extent that it was before. And also encouraging airlines to change their aircraft. And there was several pretty significant decisions. One, which even from my tenure in Federal Way, you know, 5 to 7 years ago, was an EVA Air 747, you know, that would take off between, 2 o'clock and 3 o'clock in the morning. They have actually changed that plane, which was a 747-400, I think, and now it's a 787. So there were several examples of some of these, you know, flights that have been really impactful to some of the airport communities. And as a result of this program, and granted it's a voluntary program, but with all the attention to the impacts to neighborhoods and communities, these airlines are stepping up and making some changes to their aircraft, which combining that with the third runway and having the interior runways being used as opposed to that third runway, it has a significant impact for Burien and for Normandy Park too. Yeah. So I think with that, I'll just stop there and certainly answer any questions.
Any questions for Brian?
On the Federal Register material that was included, I noticed under background information, and I'll quote here, since the mid-1970s, the number of people living in areas exposed to significant level of aircraft noise in the United States has declined from roughly 7 million to just over 400,000. I was a bit surprised to see those numbers. And I think it's remarkable that everyone affected by noise lives in the Pacific Northwest. I'd be really curious to find out where they got those numbers and how that was put together. I don't imagine we have that information, but I have a hard time, if I'm reading that correctly, accepting that as accurate.
Well, and I think Jeff, you've narrowed in on an issue that, you know, where some of these, you know, areas, and I'm not quite sure if it's, is it the part 150 or the areas that fall within this 75 DNL have actually shrunk because of the change in technology with aircraft. However, the number of flights and the fact that we're still at this 65 DNL number and the huge increases, you know, if impacts, you know, have has significant impacts on that population. So where the noise parameters that were established were much greater, you know, in 30 years ago, I think that's where they're getting their number, you know, to say that, okay, now it's a smaller area, but yet, you know, there's been significant growth in airports, you know, across the country since the 1970s. And I think for me, it was pretty stunning to listen to the fact that, you know, some work in this area has not been done since the 70s, you know, pertaining to FAA's study of this issue. So there's a long way to go here to for them to get current on the impacts to airport-related communities.
Somebody wrote that, and I guess they believed it. That's a little scary. I'd rather they didn't believe it.
Well, would it be helpful to have this as a follow-up question to Amanda, to, you know, where, how did they generate that statement and the data behind it?
Well, I think Brian has probably explained why it is. They go on to say it's because of planes being quieter. I'm sure that has something to do with it, but I still think that the noise curve they use and the way they've restricted the area probably explains most of it, but it certainly doesn't seem logical to me.
Yeah, they also haven't taken into account single event noise versus multiple event noise.
Yeah.
And that is a huge issue today because the number of flights are so much more than they ever were before.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like I'm trying to simplify things in my mind as a new person again, that when we're talking about shrinking the area, like it's a smaller geographic region, it sounds like, but there's a lot more dense activity is what it sounds like over those smaller regions.
Yes.
Okay. And it also sounds like, you know, one of the themes as you're talking about too is the data collection, right? And that impacts how they characterize effects of those in these areas.
Yeah, you know, I have enough experience with statistical measures to be dangerous, but there was a pretty extensive process that they went through to determine how, you know, 20 airports across the country represent the national average, you know, for impacts to air traffic and noise. So, you know, that certainly could be worthy of further study. I think one of the airports that was picked was Boeing Field, which is interesting as utilizing that airport as one of the sites to represent the national impacts to aircraft noise.
Interesting. Okay. Well, I'm being sensitive to time. And Lori, can you pull up the agenda again, please? And thank you, Brian, for this update. And sorry if you were a bit crunched. I know that
You're welcome.
Thank you. The El Centro de la Raza issue and Beacon Hill on King County, would it be okay if we tabled that for the next meeting? Anyone have an issue with that? Because I believe Mayor Mata had some comments, and it would be good if he was here to participate in that, because I know there's been a number of discussions. And then I also want to make sure, is there any public comment that people want to give today?
Councilmember Aragon, if I could just briefly talk about item E.
Sure.
Which is the future discussion on preparation for the SAMP process, which, as you know, SAMP, the Sustainable Airport Master Planning process, is currently being conducted by the port. This has been an ongoing, very extensive process, and we anticipate having a draft report from the Port of Seattle sometime mid-year this year. So we are prepared in several ways to respond, which we will likely have 60 to 90 days to respond to that draft report. And so we have a consortium of four cities, which is Burien, Des Moines, Burien, Des Moines, SeaTac, Normandy Park. And we have a consultant that we have a contract with that will assist us in that response on behalf of the four cities. And Burien also has a representation for Burien in and of ourselves with an airport, a firm out of San Francisco, in the event we have issues specifically directed to Burien. So we are gearing up, getting ready. This is really an important process, and I'm hopeful that the airport committee will be a part of that review and assistance as we prepare to respond to that draft report.
Thanks for the heads up. Any questions about that agenda item? Okay, so we're at the end of our agenda. Thank you everyone for coming today. And does anyone have a motion to adjourn?
Sophia, anybody wants to make a public comment?
Oh, I did ask and I didn't hear any responses. Anyone?
Oh, I guess that's right. Okay, yeah. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay, Jeff. Thank you for the reminder.
Well, I will move that we end the meeting then.
Great. Thank you, Jeff. Any seconds?
Second.
Okay. Thank you, Kevin. Thanks again for everyone for coming, and we'll see you at the next meeting, and hopefully we might have some new members join us. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.